Thanks for joining us on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain, with South Dakota State University Extension. This is Episode 5. Well, hello everyone again. John McMain here.
And Anthony Bly.
And today we are continuing our discussion about saturated buffers. And if you missed it or need a refresher, I would like to introduce our good friend, Dr. Yabba Kjærsgaard, and he will tell us what a saturated buffer is.
So a saturated buffer is constructed by installing a drainage control structure on the main line of a drainage outlet, but within a buffer that may be located along a stream or a drainage ditch. And then distribution lines are connected to the control structure and then installed or plowed in roughly parallel to the stream at the same depth typically as the tie line or the main line is. And then when the saturated buffer is operating, water is routed from the main line through the control structure into those distribution lines. And then the water moves from the distribution line into the soil in the buffer and then makes its way down gradient to the stream. And then as the water moves through the buffer, the nitrate is removed either through a plant uptake of any vegetation that may be on that buffer, or through a process called denitrification, which is a soil microbial process where nitrate is converted to harmless nitrogen gas. And then there's typically a bypass installed with the control structure so that if there's more water coming through the tile than what the capacity of the buffer is, well, then that excess water is routed into the regular outlet and then moves directly into the stream. So a saturated buffer is not holding water back in the field, but it has the drain system will still have its full capacity.
All right. Saturated buffers, like I said last time, one of my favorite conservation drainage practices. But we ended last episode on some of the challenges or situations where saturated buffers would not be ideal.
Yes. Landscape.
Landscape, topography.
Slope.
Slope, organic matter, or having enough organic matter.
Got to have a stream to run it along or a bank.
You need a buffer there, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
To have a saturated buffer. So it's not perfect for every situation, but just like bioreactors, there's some situations where it performs better than others. If you remember in the last episode, Yabba said the performance of their saturated buffer was very high.
Yeah.
Was it
90% through the buffer and 75% overall?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, 90% through the buffer, 75% load reduction overall for nitrate, which is amazing.
Oh, those are awesome numbers.
Those are awesome numbers. And so we don't see that all the time, right?
No.
I asked Yabba, what are some of the factors that influence performance of nitrate reduction in a saturated buffer?
So some of the things that affects the performance of a saturated buffer is, well, one thing is the soil temperature as water is moving through it. At lower temperatures, that microbial process that converts nitrate to nitrogen gas is slower. Another factor that impacts it is the characteristics of the flow of water moving through it, meaning that if the water is moving through it sort of over a long period of time, the buffer may be able to handle most of that water. Whereas if the water is more in a pulsing fashion, that there is flow for a few days and then there's no flow and then we have flow again, then that might impact the performance as well, since it might not be able to handle all the water's coming through a pulse as compared to if it's more of a steady flow that's moving through it. Also, the design of the saturated buffer in terms of, for example, the width of the buffer, again, typically 30 feet is the minimum, but 50 feet, if possible, is good. Just to make sure that there is enough length of buffer or width, if you will, to remove the nitrate from the water. And then also the soil itself needs to be relatively uniform, as in there shouldn't be any, say, sand lenses or gravel lenses located below the ground surface within the buffer. Because if there are sand lenses like that, they may act as a preferential flow path for the water so that the water is moving through those sand lenses directly to the stream. And it's a fairly quick process as opposed to slowly moving through the buffer as a whole. So it's typically, it may be necessary to do a few soil borings prior to installing a saturated buffer just to make sure that there aren't any sand lenses, or even just look at the stream bank if the ditch or the stream is ever cleaned out. And there you can see if the soil looks uniform and there are no pockets of gravel or sand.
So that's kind of the homework you need to do before.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of planning.
There's a lot of planning that goes into it. And those aren't always apparent if you're just looking at a stream bank.
Vegetation can cover a lot.
So, I mean, a farmer knows this field well. Would they have a suspicion if there is a sand lens or anything like that running through?
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't, you kind of see those things stuck out during the drought year.
Sure. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Because there'll hardly be any vegetation over those areas.
Sure. Because everything's, there's no water holding capacity there. And so it's right. All flowed out. Yeah. But if you're not in a drought year, then it's likely that
it's going to look all the same.
It's going to look all the same. Sure. So that's some homework you need to do on the front end. You need to make sure that you design it properly and understand the limitations of certain situations, I guess.
That's with everything we do.
Right. The nice thing about saturated buffers is once you've done that homework, once you've got it installed, they're pretty low maintenance.
Just keep the trees out of there.
And I asked Yaba to kind of compare saturated buffers with other conservation drainage practices like bioreactors in terms of maintenance, and this is what he had to say.
Saturated buffers, in most cases, there's very little maintenance that's involved with having a saturated buffer. It may be to go out and just to check to make sure that it is functioning, that the control structure is not being clogged by a root ball or something else that might have come down through the tie line. But normally, once it is installed and set and in place, you really don't have to come out and do any further adjustment. It's just sitting there and doing its thing without any further adjustment. That is as opposed to other practices such as controlled drainage, which is a practice where you can use a control structure to adjust the outlet elevation, and thereby you can hold water back within the field during times of the year where you don't need to drain. And that requires a little more maintenance, because in most situations that a person will have to go out and manually adjust the height of those boards a number of times a year. So a saturated buffer really is a very low maintenance. And also, if you contrast it to a bioreactor, where it's a trench filled with wood chips that the water is routed through, which is a very effective system, but there's a certain lifespan on those wood chips, and that's typically in that 10, 15 year range, maybe a little longer. And after which time, those wood chips will need to be replaced, so scooped out and fresh ones put in, and then you're good for another, say, 12 or 15-year period. For a saturated buffer, you do not have that need to replace anything like that. It's sitting there on its own, and it's utilizing what's in the soil already, bacteria and organic matter. And it's utilizing a process that's been around for millions of years, that denitrification process. It's nothing that we have come up with. It's been around for a very, very long time.
A natural process.
Nature, I mean, I'd say that's the best process, right?
Yeah, that's right. Use it.
There's no inputs. There's no energy inputs. There's no cost inputs after it's in there. It's doing its thing, which is great to see. I think the future is bright for saturated buffers. I think they're very functional, low maintenance, low cost. And honestly, the sky's the limit. I mean, I think we can put in as many saturated buffers as we have appropriate sites for.
Absolutely. Got a plan for those.
Right. And so that was kind of the last question that I left with Yaba, is what does he see as the future for saturated buffers? What's the excitement around saturated buffers? What's the interest, that type of thing? His answer was really cool, because it wasn't just the farmer, but it was all the way up to federal policymakers that were interested in the research and demonstration sites that they had and saw the value in those. But I'll let him fill out the details.
With any practice, it is a continuous effort to keep talking about these practices and keep bringing it in front of both farmers, contractors, and other conservation professionals. So we have field days every year. We present information at workshops, regional meetings, national conferences and such. And so the last 4 years, we have reached upwards of 2,000 individuals working or just talking about these drainage conservation practices. And that includes three U.S. Representatives and then one of the senators here from Minnesota looking at it as well. We've also more recently partnered with two multi-state research projects to expand the reach and impact of the research and demonstration we're doing at this particular site. One is in a collaboration between North Dakota, Minnesota, and then the Canadian province of Manitoba to share information and look at nutrient management that's added on top of these conservation drainage practices, controlled drainage, and saturated buffer. And the other one is a multi-state collaboration between Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois, looking at data sharing from sites with bioreactors and saturated buffers and testing new monitoring techniques. And through those research projects, we help expand the reach. We have a website, a dedicated website for the project at Minnesota Department of Agriculture. If you're interested, please go ahead and check it out. If nothing else, Google Red River Valley Drainage Water Management Project, and then that'll be the first hit. And then finally, I do want to mention multi-state product that came out 2 years ago. It's an extension publication called Questions and Answers about Saturated Buffers for the Midwest that has more information about saturated buffers, considerations for where to install them, and designs and such. It is available at transformingdrainage.org, or you can simply Google Questions and Answers about Saturated Buffers for the Midwest.
So as you can see, YAB is excited. There's a lot of multi-state work, which is really interesting because a lot of times these practices may perform differently in different temperatures, different soil types, things like that.
Correct.
And so getting a kind of multi-state regional look at these practices is, I feel like, is very important. But I would like to see more in South Dakota.
Yeah, I would too.
We have two research saturated buffers that went in kind of the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And so we've been looking at those the last 6 to 8 years. I mean, pretty good results. That's not a quantitative term, right? Pretty good. That's not statistically significant. But yeah, we've seen results not up to the 75 and 90% reduction that YABA saw on the Minnesota site, but upwards of 50% reduction for nitrate.
That's still pretty good.
It's still pretty good. And so I would like to see these systems expand in South Dakota. Again, they're one of my favorite conservation drainage practices because of the cost, because of the low maintenance. Like, you can easily do it as part of a system install when you're out there with your tile plow and your laterals. You just need to get another control structure out there. So, Anthony, you have a farm.
Yes.
You have some tile.
Yes.
Are you going to put in a saturated buffer?
Well, I've been thinking about that through the whole discussion, and I just don't think I have the right place suited for one, because it's really about the site and just don't have the stream, you know, with the buffer along it.
And so I think that's one of the biggest considerations that we have to make. We talked about some challenges, some maybe areas that aren't ideally suited, and you bring up a big one that really you need a stream and buffer that has enough space that you can put in one and be effective.
Sure. You take advantage of that natural process.
Exactly. And then another big one is thinking about that elevation drop from the field to the stream. If you want this to be a controlled drainage system, that's one thing. But a lot of times, you know, you're not looking for that to be controlled drainage. You're looking for it to be a saturated buffer. And so you need some elevation drop from the field down to the stream. So correct, you're not backing water up into the field.
Right.
And then the other thing with siting is thinking about the soils and how homogeneous the soils are, how much they vary. And there's two pieces with that. One is if you have any sand lenses or gravel lenses, those could be preferential flow paths.
Mm-hmm.
You get a preferential flow path, you lose the retention time through that buffer. And when you lose retention time, you lose treatment. The other piece is the amount of organic matter that you have in that buffer. And a lot of times we don't have to worry too much about this.
Oh, we're pretty high in South Dakota.
But again, if you have a area with a lot of sand, then you might run into
that.
Going to
be restricted, yeah.
So then you got a double whammy of lower tension times because that water is able to preferentially flow through that sand, and there's not much organic matter to get denitrification to happen.
Correct.
So those are the challenges. Let's finish on a high note. Benefits of saturated buffers. What's your favorite thing about a saturated buffer?
Well, I think when you got the right site, it's pretty much somewhat of a guarantee it's going to be effective.
That's a really good point.
For the money that you put into it, which isn't a lot.
You know, that's a really good point, because a lot of times people are concerned about, they may be interested in putting in a conservation practice, but there's no guarantee it's going to work.
Right.
Saturated buffer, it's a pretty good guarantee that it's going to do what you want it to do. You're going to get nitrate reduction day in, day out, natural process. Those bacteria just cranking away, doing your job.
Takes care of itself.
I really like the low cost aspect. I really like the fact that you can put it in kind of in conjunction with another tiling project.
Absolutely. Same time.
Same time, same equipment, same materials. You're good to go. And I think the cost is another big benefit.
Absolutely.
$2,000, 75% nitrate load reduction. That's a good deal.
Cost ratio conversion there is pretty easy to see.
Yep. So saturated buffers, the good, the bad, the ugly. You heard it here on Streamlines. Thanks for joining us today on Streamlines. We sure had a lot of fun today. Hope you did too. If you want to learn more about anything you heard today, head on over to the SDSU Extension website. But for now, I'm John McMain.
I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time.